Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Everyone, it's time for me to pose three questions to another fascinating, wonderful, they're usually showbiz professionals. I mean, I don't really care to talk to anyone who's not in show business.
What a waste of time.
Yeah. Ugh. And I'm talking to a very talented, fun person who I know in real life. We are IRL pals. It's Judy Greer.
Hi,
the amazing Judy Greer, who you've seen in everything. You're
lovely
one of those people that, do people know exactly where they see you from, or do they go like, oh my God, I know you from, you know.
I have a million stories about this, but one happened yesterday. Would you like me to share?
Well, that's what we're here for, Judy.
All right, Andy. So listen, yesterday was, this might be an overshare. It was my annual mammogram. I don't think it is an overshare. I think it's important to be taking care of our bodies as women and men.
You got to get your boobs smashed.
I had my boobs smashing yesterday. They had like an upgraded machine, which made it still hurt and was still awful. But the technician I had was also new. And I went in and, you know, now we all have to like wear masks and everything. Anyway, she was like, oh. She didn't speak English as a first language, so it was a little bit broken English, but she was like, oh my gosh, I know you. How do I know you? I was like, well, I've been in here before once a year, but like I'm an actress. And she's like, oh my gosh, yes, your eyes and your voice. Yes, of course. And she was like, would you mind pulling down your mask so I could see your face? And I was like, okay. I mean, I've been vaccinated. I pull my mask down and she got so excited. And she was like, oh my God, you're on Friends. You're on Friends. And I was like, no, I wasn't. I was not on Friends ever. Yeah. And then I like had to sort of negotiate with her, like what I was in before she would even like start doing my mammogram, which, okay, this is what I asked my husband last night. Is that unprofessional of her?
To say, oh my God, you're on Friends?
No, like, couldn't this have been happening, like, while we're doing my mammogram? Or I felt like my mammogram was being held hostage by my resume. Like, until I could name a thing that she could identify, like, I couldn't get my boob into the machine. Like, it wasn't happening.
Yes, it's unprofessional. But much of Los Angeles's medical profession is unprofessional and does shit
Fair
like
enough.
That.
Fair
had
enough.
I have a new doctor now because my old doctor, who is a very good doctor, I mean, in terms of like being a doctor and diagnosing things and knowing what to do, but he was a chatty Cathy who, while telling you stories about his famous clients, told me at least four times, and I'm not a star fucker. I mean, I'm no star fucker, but you know, the other day, you know, Nick Cage, you know, all this. And I, you know how when you get a physical, you get like you go in and you get the blood drawn and everything. Mm-hmm. And then you come back after the blood work comes. And that's when, you know, he touches you everywhere and, you know, goes over the stuff. I come back in like loose fitting clothes because I know that my testicles are going to be fondled and a finger's going in my butt. And he talked so long that we ran out of time. And he said, are you okay to come back sometime? Because we talked, which was...
We?
Yeah. And the nurse came in and was like, you know, like so-and-so is here. Because he's in Beverly Hills. Like basically came in and said,
Someone slightly more famous is here.
No, that high maintenance lunatic, like one of those kind of, like she's here, came in, he said, yeah, I'll be with her in a minute. And then she came back and she said, she really is, like, you could tell, like, making a scene because he wasn't there. So he's like, listen, we talked too long. We ran out of time. Would you mind? And I, you know, I don't fight at things like that. Like, I don't put up a stink. I just get a new doctor. And that's what I did. You know what I mean? I came back and I got the rest of the exam. And then I just went and got a new doctor. Who's closer to me anyway. So even doctors, not just technicians.
Even, well, my two or three gynecologists ago, he quit the business because of what I was expressed to me was that he's best friends with Denzel Washington and was going to travel with Denzel to be his personal doctor. Now, this is a gynecologist.
Right.
An OBGYN. And I loved him. He was like amazing. And they're like, oh, he's, you know, he's like quitting the business to go and travel with his best friend, Denzel Washington. And I can't prove that that happened, but that's what I was told. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, and then I now am still looking for, if anyone listening to this loves
a
gynecologist in Los Angeles, I'm on just the hunt.
I'll promote it on Twitter and make an answer in the.
That would be really helpful.
In the replies.
But yeah, LA doctors, man.
And what the fuck is Denzel Washington doing that he needs a doctor traveling with him?
I don't know.
Or is he just lonely?
Maybe he just wants a friend.
Now you.
Me.
As so many of the best people are, you are a Midwesterner.
Yes.
Now, do you still feel that? Do you still carry that with you? Or have you been here long enough that you don't really feel that anymore?
No, I think I still have it.
Yeah, I do too.
I do. I think I still have it because I'm still cheap. I still think I'm never going to work again. I'm still nice to people. I still give people too many chances. I still get the accent when I'm drinking. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I'm happy about it. I like it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it is what it is. So, the Sedarises, David and Amy Sedaris are friends of mine. And like David used it in a couple of plays, a good old Wisconsin fish boil, which is a real thing. And I have been to good old Wisconsin fish boils and they are fantastic. And I miss them. And I think about things, especially in the fall, I think about things like a good old fashioned Wisconsin fish boil and, you know, apple picking and, you know,
I was going to say cider mills.
Yeah. And cider mills and all that kind of, and just the greenness of it, you know?
I know. And like how you feel like you really earn summer.
Yeah. That's
like,
true too.
I also miss like pasty legs that first day in April when it's like 50 and everyone's wearing like short shorts and you're like, it's over, like the glare of people's like translucent flesh is overwhelming.
I wear shorts here on days when people are like, why are you wearing shorts? And it's like, I've stopped feeling things in my legs at about age 6. You know? You just get used to it.
Yeah.
Now you're from Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Outside of Detroit.
Yeah. Livonia is where I went to high school.
And was your dad in the auto business? Because I know he was some kind of engineer.
Yeah, he was an engineer. He worked on like axle design for heavy trucks.
Sexy.
I know. It's pretty hot. He's smart. He definitely had something patented.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And did it make him fabulously wealthy? That's a no.
No.
Oops.
I mean, maybe if he would have created Spanx, but instead he was like, he was working on axles for like big giant semis.
Yeah, yeah.
Not and your most lucrative.
Your mom worked too, but I can't remember what it was.
She is a nurse who then became a hospital administrator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she is pretty cool. I mean, she is cool. She's still with us. So is my dad. They're still married even. But my mom was she was sort of trailblazing in Detroit. She worked for this hospital that's no longer there called Northwest General. And she had the first ever drug recovery ward.
Oh,
in,
wow.
Yeah, in Detroit. She was saying that she was running this hospital and she was seeing a lot of people coming in overdosing and with like drug related injuries and stuff. And she was kind of like putting two and two together. And she had some extra beds in this one section of the hospital. And she said to the board, like, you know, I think we could be serving our community a lot better if we were, instead of just like treating these people and like putting them back out on the street, mm-hmm. if we could actually like help them with their addiction and with their issues. And so she put together this drug recovery ward in her hospital and was like the first one to do it. And I mean, the hospital eventually closed, but it was, you know, for these people, like kind of life changing. And I'm always really proud of her for that.
That is really great. That's, yeah. You know, did she go on after that hospital or did she retire?
So then she decided she wanted to work in hospice. So she went back to school, got another master's in hospice care, and she was then running hospice facilities. But through all of it, she always missed nursing and she always liked being with patients. And when, you know, when you're in like administration and stuff, you like never work with patients anymore. So sort of like as like retirement kind of started to come, she was kind of went back to just being a nurse and she was really happy doing that.
Hospice is really, that's a heavy line of work to do.
She really loves death. She's very religious. And I think that, you know, that's, I mean, she will call me and be like, oh, honey, I had the most beautiful death today. It was so gorgeous. It was so peaceful and wonderful. And I'm like, I'm not there, Mom. I'm not there yet. Yeah,
sorry, Mom.
But she does have great stories. And I think that, you know, we need those people. So thank God for people like my mom who are willing to do it.
Well, you find out, too, as you get older. And you it becomes a part of your life, you know, like, when I was little, like we lived with my grandparents and there were a lot of relatives around and my grandmother was like one of 700. So I was like, by the time I was 12, I'd probably been to 15 funerals.
Yeah.
And it was just, and also cause you know, the old people in town had died and you'd go to their funerals.
Yeah. Like,
my kids have never been to a funeral.
Yeah.
Never, not even one. And so I kind of had it young as a kid, you know, dealing with death and like the death of my grandfather and stuff. But then I didn't have it around. And, you know, and the first few deaths that I encountered in my adult life were real difficult. But then it becomes another thing that you got to deal with, you know, it becomes another.
Well, that's also kind of a Midwestern attitude, too. Yeah. It's like you just, you know, you get up the next morning and go to work and get back to your life.
Yeah.
I think that like in a society where we don't totally value like old people.
Yeah.
I think that's why.
Listen, some of them with good reason. Let's be honest.
Okay, fine. You're right. Like, I would say like 10% of them suck, but like the rest of them.
They can be great. They can be
some
great.
Of them, you know, but like when you don't, when we've stopped kind of like valuing our elders and looking up to them.
Yeah.
Like then it also goes, I think, hand in hand to stop like sort of being respectful of death and like acknowledging of death. And, mm-hmm. and like, I think sometimes maybe that's why we lock them all up so we don't have to deal with like our own mortality.
Yeah. So got any brothers or sisters?
Child.
Oh no. Now, and is it true? Do you feel like you're a classic only child, like used to being center of attention kind of stuff? Or
those are questions I feel like you should ask my friends. I don't know, because to me,
okay, we've got him on the line. Let's bring him in.
What's up, Janet? I don't know. I've been told I'm not. I've been told by people like, oh, I would never have guessed. Like it's like some kind of curse. But I've also,
I wouldn't believe it. I mean, I wouldn't think, not that I'm like really hold to these, like you're an only child. There's a lot of people in my life that are like, oh, you know, that's cause that person's an only child. And I'm like, you know, and I would have guessed that you were from somewhat of a brood just because you seem to be a team player who isn't so needy.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm that needy. Again, you should ask my friends and probably also my husband. But no, I don't think I'm like super typical. I don't feel like I need to be the center of attention. But I'm also like older now.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm in my 40s. So I'm kind of like, let her have it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Or sort of, you know, we're all like kind of figuring out who we are more and like fitting into our pants better. Or, you know, I don't know what that means because I don't fit into my pants right now. But anyway,
no, I don't. My pants. There's a whole wing of my closet that's like, I'll come back to you someday, guys.
What are pants? Okay. Can we just be honest? What are pants?
Yeah.
But I also like, I know the only child that people think of and they are really fucking annoying. Yeah.
Do you think that you have always been the same person that you are? Like, do you think that you've gone through major changes, or do you still feel, cause like for me, I feel like I'm probably about 17 now. Like it's, you know what I mean? In my internal brain, you know, whereas, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I was maybe 15. You know what I mean? Like the actual picture I have of myself or like how I view things and hear things is still pretty much the same as when I was young.
I think I'm circling back.
Yeah.
I think I'm circling back a little bit. And I think that like, I'm now in my mid 40s where I thought I would be in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Like I thought in my 30s, like, oh, I'll have things figured out. I'll like be more settled down. Like I'll have more confidence. I don't know. I thought, but it's taken a lot longer for that. But I also know in sort of like superficial ways, I feel like I'm circling back. Like I'm starting to like go back to like dressing how I did in high school and like letting my hair be curly and like all kinds of things that I used to do. And I'm wondering if my mentality will follow, because I also think I was, you know, we're all like younger and dumber and happier in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know. My husband and I, this is probably a terrible thing to say, but like there's like happy dum-dums out there who are like, you know, just happy.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not false. It's true.
And I guess I'm trying to get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a struggle to know, like, because especially if you ever do any kind of like work on your mental health and you get into
therapy. Which I'm deep into right now.
Yeah. Good. Good. Because I think it's important. And I don't understand anybody's like, I would never get anything from therapy. I'm like,
what?
Everybody could get something from it.
I know. I'm having a fight with my friend about this right now.
Yeah. But I think like you try and get away from compartmentalization, you know, when you start, like you think like, I shouldn't be different people in different places. I should integrate this so that I'm the same person and that I equalize all these different areas of my life and that I get this continuity and I'm not feeling this, you know, grinding gears as I change from one thing to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But and then as you get older, it's like, no, some things you need to put away and leave them over there. And then go on and know they're there and everything. But like, you know, there's too many things that you can just get stymied by because of fear and anxiety that you just have to be like, no, I'm just going to enjoy this orange and, you know, and sitting in my backyard and I'm not going to think about, you know, all the diesel fuel it took to get this orange to me, you know?
Yes. I mean, I think of almost like, sort of like an armor. You have to kind of like put, as far as like being different people in different situations, as for the years, like you said, I can totally relate to, I just want to be myself all the time. But it's like myself, like my realest, truest self can't get through some of the situations I have to be in.
Yeah.
So like I need to have different armor for like different situations to get through it and to like, you know, get back to being home again. And in talking about compartmentalizing, if you're open, if you're reading anything on your phone, you're going to be so fucked up over all the shit that is happening in the world, in the country, in the state, in the city, in the block that you live in. I mean, I'm on that Citizen app and it's like, there's always a dude with a machete like two blocks away from me. I'm pretty sure he might live at the bus. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
But you should never have moved to Macheteville.
why did I do that? It's right. Well, it's also like very near the machete superstore. So that was our, like, yeah, that's why there's men with machetes everywhere.
Yeah.
But I think that like you do have to somehow teach yourself to compartmentalize and to like decide what to care about.
Yeah.
And the things you're not saying like, well, I don't care about how the orange got here. You're just saying like, I can't care about it right now. Like,
right.
Like I can't, I have to. And I was thinking in some of my younger days and I was like, well, I want to like kind of work with a charity and I want to like give back and stuff. And I remember hearing Dido in an interview. She said something that stuck with me and someone that like worked for her was like, well, pick two things and like really care about those two things. And I thought like, that's pretty good advice. You know, you can, and another friend said something similar, like after Trump was elected and we all thought the world was going to end. And then it almost did, but, so we were right as we knew we were anyway. But like I got similar advice from someone else who was like, you know, you can send $25 a month or whatever you can to like a million different places. You can like, you can really spread it really thin, or you can kind of like hone in on one or two, three things to really care about. And that was, I thought, really good advice.
Yeah. I think you're right on that too, because I always, the way I think about it is like there are things that I focus on and things that I give money to and things that I give time to. And then there are other areas where I'm kind of like, let those be someone else's passion.
Like
somebody else is going to take up the slack on that. And yes, I will benefit from the progress that they make on the slack that they're doing on, you know, that they're taking up for me on that thing.
Yeah.
And the things I'm doing will help them too. Hopefully.
It is hard to sometimes, I should say, it's easy to get overwhelmed by all the need and all the asks and all that, you know, we think we should be, could be, better be doing. But then if you don't enjoy the orange when you're eating it, then you really have fucked up. Like, I don't eat meat and people always get like weird, like, oh, does it bother you that I'm eating meat? And I'm always like, no, it doesn't, but just eat it. Like, don't throw it out. I'm always like, if you're going to do it, like enjoy it and finish it. And I think like with the orange, if you sit and you eat like whatever the orange symbolizes for you, you know, like enjoy it and take the time to savor the moment or the, you know, whatever. And then if you're just sitting there like feeling guilty about it the whole time, then like you're doing more of a disservice.
And you haven't done anything other than make yourself feel bad at that
point.
Exactly. You know?
Exactly.
It's like just the little, if you just take care of your little corner and do things right.
Yeah.
You know, I went and got an electric car and I just was like, cause I, you know, I wanted an electric car. And then I found out after having it a little while, cause I have a dog that's as big as a horse. I was like, why did I get this tiny little car? And I, you know, and so I actually ended up trading it for a bigger car, but which I couldn't find a battery one of those.
Yeah.
And so I got a hybrid of that. But at any rate, I was like, the battery car, like, what happens if we get an earthquake and we don't have power for 4 days? Like,
you're not driving your car.
Yeah. There's every, I mean, you know, if I had a car with gas in it, I could escape. You know, I could drive away, but with the battery car, I could get, you know, whatever, 190 miles and then just live there, wherever that was.
What is which direction do I drive 190 miles?
Into the ocean.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop,
We have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
So you, were you a show-offy kid? Were you a performing kid? Like, did you always have kind of the bug?
I was in the arts, but I wouldn't say I ever had the bug. But I did, I was like a dancer. I did ballet dancing mm-hmm. as a child, and that was kind of what got me on stage. And then, like, once I was up there, I was then kind of like, oh, maybe I'll audition for the High School Musical and be like, you know, in the chorus or something. And in that audition, you have to like audition for a role, and then I got it. And it was kind of like that. And like, yeah. As far as ballet is concerned, like I was never going to be a ballet dancer, and I wasn't even really that good. So it was kind of a natural transition, but I was never like, oh, I'm the kid who was like putting on plays in her garage. Like, no, that was not me. I was the kid who like my parents would like hide my book, so I had to go outside and play. Like my directions to my babysitters in the summer were like, she must go outside in the sunshine today. Like, don't let her sit in her room and read all day long.
Wow.
I know.
What kind of, were you reading everything? Were you reading everything or?
I was. Like, I stole books from my parents' bookshelf and read things I should never have been reading at my age, because I just like couldn't get enough. I couldn't get enough. And I was really into those Sweet Valley High books, and I loved those. And I loved Beverly Cleary, and I loved Judy Blume. And then as I got tore through those, and then it was like my parents' bookshelves and just like trying those out. And I don't know, like I was reading like James Michener and like looking for Mr. Goodbar as like a child. Like I remember very specifically, like there's like an oral sex scene and looking for Mr. Goodbar that I was like, as like a child being like, I should not be reading this.
How old were you?
I don't remember how old. I was young, but this also like, these are the books like on the bottom of the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. It looks, it's the same size as my books.
Yeah. I get the words. I always feel like, you know, you're fine. You know what I mean? Like you read that as Mr. Goodbar. Cause like people that freak out cause their kids hear swearing or they catch them watching somebody, you know, like a porno. Like the first time that we caught my son, who's 20 now, my ex-wife caught him and a friend, and it's just the best thing ever. They Googled the word naked. and it, of course, went like right to hardcore. Yeah. The first thing that came up is just
was like three dicks and an asshole. And
yes,
like,
exactly.
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah. But which is usually the progression for boys. It is like, I'm curious about nudity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get to that stuff.
Yeah.
Get to the craziest stuff. But I always feel like it doesn't kill you. Like nobody, I mean, granted, there are people with porno problems, that is for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think a little kid learning how babies are made is the end of the world, you know?
I wish people would talk more about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a book on my bed one day. And like, I love my parents. They were great. We're close. But like, come on, man. Like, don't let your daughter learn about sex from her first boyfriend. Like, that's not what you want. That was a lot. And I remember like, there's a book on the bed. Do you have any questions? No.
Yeah.
And then it's, of course, like my parents are very religious, though. It was a lot of like, you know, when a man and a woman are in love and they get married and they pray about it, then they're allowed to like put things inside of other things. Like, you know what I mean? We would all just be healthier if we just like talked about sex more, like with our kids and stuff. Because I think, you know, then the Googling is like, when you take the onus off of it, I think it's the taboo that we all love. Like that as kids, like we all want to do the thing we're not allowed to do.
Yes. Yes.
Or talk
about. And also kids are horn dogs. Like little kids are horn dogs. They're
do adults forget what it was like?
Yeah. The first book, the first, you go to a reference book, the first thing that you look for is like vagina or penis or, you know, whatever. You know, it's just like, it's like, that's always, and you could tell in the books, in the library, like those pages were like, obviously the spine was cracked open.
Yeah.
To like the reproduction section, you know?
I mean, it opened right up to it, Mom. I'm sorry. It was like, literally, I put the book down and it...
Yeah. It's obviously a hot topic.
Yeah.
You went to theater school, though, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you set out to go to theater school? And in Chicago, right? DePaul?
Yeah, I went to DePaul, the theater school at DePaul University.
Was it because it was Catholic? Was it a Catholic thing? Were your folks Catholic?
I was raised Catholic for a little while, and then I asked to leave the Catholic Church.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that go over?
You know, they were cool with it. They just said you can go, that I had to go to like a Christian church. And I had to go to church.
Yeah.
And it was basically that I just wanted to go to this Presbyterian church because my friend Carol went there and the boys were cuter. And so I was like, I don't want to go to Catholic church anymore, but I want to go to this Presbyterian church. And they were like, okay, that's cool. Like, as long as you go to church every Sunday, like, we're cool with that. So I was like, great. So I did that. So the DePaul thing being Catholic was like, whatever. But I didn't actually set out to go to theater school. I was in an acting program in my high school, which I auditioned for, and I got in and I was in this program and it was really fun, mostly because I didn't have to go to like biology and stuff. And then there was it was time to apply to college. I didn't really know what to do. I didn't really have a plan and I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And this girl in my program had said she was auditioning for this acting program at the school in Chicago, and it was really exclusive and they only accept 10% of the people who audition and yada yada. And I was like, whatever. And I went home that night and told my mom this story, and my mom was like, oh, you're auditioning for that program. Like, no one tells my daughter she can't get into a program. And I was like, yeah, it's like really fancy. Like, I can't just like go audition for it. And she was like, oh, you're going this weekend. And I'm like, you're insane. Fine, whatever. Anyway, we drove to Chicago that weekend. My mom somehow got me into the audition process, even though you were supposed to have your stuff turned in like 2 weeks ahead of time. I don't know. She's a witch. And so I went, I auditioned, I got in. And since I had no plan, I just thought I would go. Plus, I really wanted to be in a big city. My parents wouldn't let me go to New York or LA. So Chicago is the next best thing. So I decided to go there. I get there. They hand you your schedule. Like, I didn't have to go sign up for whatever, like you see in the movies. And I was like, oh, this is great. I don't even have to like fight through like, what classes do I take in some kind of random orientation or whatever. But like, I get there and I realize like, oh, like I didn't know what the word conservatory was. I didn't know. So I didn't realize like I was just all acting all the time from like 8:30 in the morning until 11 o'clock at night. Like, you go to class all day, then your crew as a freshman, your crew on the show that's being performed all night long. And like, it was nonstop. And
immersive.
And I went home for Christmas that year and I was like, I don't think this is for me. Like, I'm not this person. Like, these people like die for acting. Like, I'm here because like of you, you know?
Yeah.
But it was fun and I liked it. And I mean, I don't know. We were on one of those, at the time, the school doesn't do this anymore, but they cut the class in half after the first year. And after the second year, you had to be invited back. And so like both years I was on warning. So both years I was like, well, I probably won't even get invited back. So it's not like I'll just wait and see what happens. And both years I got invited back. And then finally, you know, when I made it to my third year, and I was home free, I was like, well, I guess I'm here now. I guess I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
But I did like it. Like, it's not like I thought it was stupid or anything. Like, I really liked it and I had fun. And I don't think I was like necessarily that great at it in college, but it was, I don't know. I always assumed I'll just have to go to get a master's in something that I can actually do for my life. But for now, it's fun.
If you had not been invited back, would you then just like, still be at DePaul, but just in a different department, just have to choose a different major? Or would you have to go to school somewhere else?
People who didn't get invited back did both. Some people stayed. And if you didn't get invited back to the program, you could do like what's called a theater studies major.
And some
people did that. And some people just left altogether and went somewhere else. I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah. My son's in art And he started out kind of towards a BFA, which is just painting, painting, painting.
Right.
And he was like, he had the exact same thing. This is too much painting, you know?
I know.
And so he's going, now he's getting a BA in art, which is basically there's painting, yeah. but there's also, he also will learn about other things.
And I tell people.
Which will make your painting better, you know?
And make your life better yeah. and make you a more interesting person. Like,
yep.
I loved my program and I do think it was great, but like I got no college education. Like we basically at the time, and maybe it's changed, we took the same classes that like the basketball players took, like designed mm-hmm. to pass like a few academic classes so that you could get a bachelor's yeah. instead of like a certificate. And that was that. And like, I do regret that I didn't do something like a little bit more mainstream. I mean, hindsight, blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, I do give that advice to people and they're like, I'm starting out. What do I do? And I'm like, learn things, read books.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
don't be a dumb actor.
Also, I think, you know, because I went 2 years to University of Illinois, just kind of in liberal arts. And mm-hmm. then I went to Columbia College in Chicago mm-hmm. to film
yeah,
school.
Yeah, I had tons of friends there.
Right down the street. And I found that kids, and I think that I see it today with like younger people, these kids go to film school and all they learn about is movies. So then they're expected to make movies and all they know is movies. So mm-hmm. they make movies about movies.
Yeah.
Rather than movies about what it's like to work in an office or what it's like to be a right. fireman or what it's like to, you know, fall in love overseas. You know, I mean, they just, yeah. all they know is like, you know, let's talk about Barry Lyndon again. And like, no, yeah, let's yeah. not. Let's talk about, you know, getting your heart broken or something. So, and also too, I always feel too, when young people are like, what should I do? It's like, eh, just do things. Don't rush.
Yeah.
There's no rush. You'll be fine. You know, you'll be fine yeah. or you won't. If you're meant to do this, you're meant to do this. And if you're not, you'll learn a lesson in disappointment. Because even if you end up doing this, you learn lots of lessons in disappointment.
Dude. You know. I know. And I have civilian friends who are like, I have a really big job interview today. I'm so nervous. I'm like, I'm the wrong person to talk to about that.
Right, right.
I'm like, every day of my life is a job interview.
Yeah.
Like I don't get most of the jobs I interview for.
Yeah.
Quote unquote interview. So like I'm like.
Yeah. And I also feel too, like you can, well, I guess it's the same of a job interview, but like I always looked at it, like what's special about acting is that, you know, if you're, say, like, and you're in sales and you go in and you have a product and you get turned down, you can go like, well, they didn't like the product, but like, you're the product.
No,
your face
like
and your voice and your body and how you move. That's the product. And they go, no.
No.
And then the even further level of it is you get a TV show. And then America says, nah, yeah. no, thank you.
No,
yeah, no,
that's
we, yeah, we see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we see, we get it, but no thanks, you know.
I know.
You can it's make like, yourself nuts.
How can we do this to ourselves over and over and over?
Because it's fun.
I know.
You know what? It's like a high stakes game and we're used to it and it is really fun, you know.
It's great when you're doing
yeah.
it and it's worth it and it's like, and I, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this from all your guests and feel the same way, but it's like, we don't get paid for the job. Mm-hmm. We get paid for all the jobs we didn't get yeah. and all the times we failed and all the times we put ourselves out there.
Yeah. And even when you're on the job, you get paid for the waiting around. yeah. That's it. You know, the sitting somewhere for 7 hours and then being told, you know what? We don't need you today.
We're so not going to get to your scene.
Yeah,
we're so
yeah.
sorry. And now
Oopsie.
The waiting around is like by yourself in a mask, in a tent, alone. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I just finished my first COVID job and it was so different.
I was going to ask. Yeah, because I've done guest spots. I've
yeah.
done a few guest spots and it's very weird. It feels kind of military, like with different zones and masks and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the first time I ever, like I always drive myself to work when I shoot at home in LA, but when I'm on location, usually they have someone pick you up in a van or whatever. And this mm-hmm. time I was kind of like, you know, I think I'll just drive myself because I had a rental car and I've never done that before. Because I just thought, like, I'll just, like, take one potential danger out of the equation. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And
right, right.
That was really strange, but I also kind of really liked it. And I was like, oh, that's something I might like take away from this. Like I might, we call it self-drive. I might self-drive to work now when I'm on location. Like that's a little something I learned. I also opted to stay in an apartment instead of a hotel because I thought, again, it would be a little bit safer. Yeah. And I also really liked that. And then I was constantly, when they like knock on my trailer door and they're like, they're ready for you in hair and makeup, I was always leaving my trailer and they're like, you need to put a mask on. And I'm like, oh, right, shit,
right,
sorry.
Right, okay. Right. Yeah.
Like I forgot about the masks and, but like, yeah, it was a little like what I love acting, but I also really love people and being around people and meeting people and getting to know people and their stories and their lives and like who they are and where they came from and all the things. Basically, your three questions is what I love to ask too.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get much of that, you know, yeah. This time.
Yeah, no, I do a guest spot on a show that one of the executive producers directed a show that I did, like one mm-hmm. of the shows that I was on.
Your show, yeah.
And yeah, Andy Barker, PI, and a guy named Jason Ensler. And I went over to talk to him by the Video Village. And somebody that I had never even seen on set, some guy came up to me and was like, you can't talk to them. You can't yeah. stand here and talk. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is what I do, though. I mean,
no, this is where you know, I sit. This is yeah, where I hang well, out. This yeah, is how I well, get my next job.
Right, exactly. No, it's like this is where the real entertaining happens, like here at Video Village. You know,
I
that's
know.
Like more the fun part of it.
I went to hug a crew member that I hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah.
And they were like, you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yes. You're a married woman.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
This is something that I ask you because I feel like we're in the same kind of boat here. Because I noticed, you know, they sent me some research, and I think it's even like on Wikipedia. Judy is well known for playing the best friend or the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, being the second.
Yeah.
And boy, do I know that
yeah.
you know, that thing. Like being yeah. an accessory to the main focus.
Yeah.
And how does that sit with you? And is it something that you thought would be coming your way? I mean, you know.
No one, I think, goes into this wanting to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
right, right.
I think
well, but not every people don't always like. I didn't go into this because I wanted to be Tom Cruise. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't yeah. want to be the biggest thing in the world.
I guess I never thought like I want to be a star.
Yeah.
But when you're little and you're watching romantic comedies, you see yourself as the girl in the romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Or like, I shouldn't say you. One does. I do. I did. Like,
I do. I sure do.
So. So no, like while I was never like, I mean, I guess mine would have been like Julia Roberts. I didn't come here thinking I'm going to be Julia Roberts, but I thought like, those are the roles I want to play. That's like those are the fun parts. And the truth is, if I were to not be grateful and not like see the trajectory of my career, like I would make myself crazy. Like,
yeah.
And I would tell, like, if I was talking to myself, I'd be like, then you should just quit if you're unhappy because, like, you have it really good. And it's not, how do you say this? It's not like it's the time's past, but also, like, looking back and seeing, you know, like, I have a career that people would cut their fingers off for, you know? Mm. And so for me to look up to someone else's career and wish I had that career, like at this point in my life and in my career, like, I think that's just crazy making.
Yeah.
I mean, what I can say that is disappointing is how underwritten our roles can be.
Yeah.
And how we show up on set expecting to like, you'll make it better. And it's like, why don't you make it better? Because
yeah,
you're
yeah.
a fucking writer and you wrote this. I don't feel like that's fair to us.
Yeah.
And I also like, oh, can we add in a line where you're like, you know, oh, you finally got your driver's license? Because we need to establish it. Like, she didn't have her driver's license. It's like, I don't need to be your exposition all mm-hmm. the time. Like, that's you being a lazy writer or a lazy yeah. producer or director.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those are the things that I think can be frustrating still. But also, I personally have been able to like fly like really under the radar and do all kinds of things that mm-hmm. like without the pressure of like, can she open a movie? Does she have box office? Like, I get to play a million different roles and a million different things. I think people still feel like they're discovering me sometimes. And, you know, I have lots of different demographics of fans.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, you know, pigeonholed. But as far as just that like sidekick, you know, number three on the call sheet, it's always better when number one on the call sheet is awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? And I'll say like, I always like joke that my sweet spot is like number three to five on the call sheet, because like when I'm on location, like I do get to go to the cool restaurants. I get to go shopping. I get to have days off. I get to see the art museums and stuff. And like, I remember shooting one of the Ant-Mans with Paul Rudd. I guess it was the second one. And some crew member was like, so what have you done since you've been in San Francisco? And Paul was like, I've worked every second that I've been here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah, no, I am.
Paul is Paul, so he was, of course, lovely to the person. But
yes,
like, looks
yes.
at me like, what would I have done?
I know. No, I'm right there with you on all of it. And I remember once I heard, I think he was on Howard Stern, Steve Van Zandt, you know, Miami Steve
yeah.
Van Zandt of
yeah.
the Springsteen band
yeah.
and of Sopranos. He talked about how, you know, because he's like number two in the E Street band now. He's got, you know, he's the number two guitarist, and he's, you know, this Miami Steve. And he said, and he had his own band, Disciples of Soul, I think, where they were called. So he's like, I was number one. And he goes, and I didn't like it very much. He's yeah. like, number two, you just get to have fun and you don't have yes. to. And like, and I have throughout this thing with Conan, I've been like, he knows every executive's name because
yeah.
he has to. I don't know any of their names because they don't give a shit about me. And he has to go to meetings
not
with
true,
them.
But
and, well, but you know
I
what
know
I
what
mean.
You mean.
You know what I mean. I mean, no, I'm happy to say they don't give a shit about me because in take away all nuance. Ultimately, they don't give a shit about me. Like I'm Conan's problem to them. You know,
right,
like
right.
You know what I mean. I'm just an adjunct to him off of them, and it's nice. It's kind of nice. There's been so many times when I just feel like the weight that he's carrying on his back
yeah.
and he needs to care. Like that's who he is.
Yeah.
Like he would be dissatisfied being me and I would be miserable being him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing I've noticed is the pressure
yeah.
That is not on us. Like you're saying exactly like famous actresses and actors who like, you know, one bad opening weekend. Remember those when
yeah.
movies were in theaters mm-hmm. and they had opening weekend? One bad opening weekend can like change the trajectory, you know,
yeah.
of like of what you've been building. And for us, it's like a movie doesn't do well or nobody sees it. It's like a drag, but it's not necessarily my fault.
Right, right.
You know, by the way, it's not the fault of the movie star either. Let's be honest. It's just the way the ball bounces sometimes.
It's it's all a weird mix.
It is weird, but it does, you know, but that can have a negative impact on the next like couple jobs. And but also it's sometimes fun. I'm sure you would agree, like maybe your first day of work is after they've already been shooting for 2 weeks and then you come in and everyone's like so excited, like to have
new person,
making jokes and like being funny. And like you kind of have like my little like stand-up Judy that I kind of do, like my little jokes. Like, I don't know, like that's also kind of fun too. And sometimes I see that like while my character is taking the pressure off, so am I sometimes a little bit. Like, they need us, Andy. That's my point.
Yeah.
They need us.
Yeah. And it's, I actually find too, character roles are more interesting than leading parts.
Yeah.
Most times. It's just, they're the real people. They get the good, they get the jokes, you know?
I know.
Yeah. They got to lay the pipe of exposition, you know? And and on shitty productions, lazy productions, they have to do too much of it. But they also get, you know, it's quick hit and run, you know?
Exactly. Like,
yeah.
But sometimes, I don't know, I have this a lot where people on the street, when they recognize me, they'll honestly say, like, why do they make you look so ugly in movies? Like, you're so pretty in real life. And I'm always like, I don't, well, I didn't think they did. But there is also that pressure. And I can say as a female actress in Hollywood, like, the supporting roles, like, there's also not that pressure either, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't have to be glamorous and beautiful. I can be a real person. Like, I don't have to look perfect in my roles because my characters aren't perfect and they're not always that.
Well, perfection and glamour is all, it's like, it's fake.
It's like
it takes tons of work. It takes, like, I always just love in movies when somebody, you know, like is on the lam and their hair is perfect.
I know.
You know, like, it's just like, And you think, like, why can't their hair be fucked up? They just jumped out of a moving railroad car because there are too many people who are like, well, you can't let her hair be fucked up.
No. Or like you wake up in the morning. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. With eye makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we need to get on to the next step, which is where are you going? What are you looking forward to? Now, I know... I think the last time I saw you in person, you had just directed a movie. Did anything happen with that? Is it?
It is. It's sort of, I mean, it came out quickly as movies tend to do, but you can watch it. It's called A Happening of Monumental Proportions. And I think you can rent it however you rent movies these days. And that was an amazing experience and ultimately definitely made me a better actor, like as far as just the job is concerned, like not necessarily like it made me really appreciate what the other side of it is. And I'm also hoping to direct again. I have a couple movies I'm attached to, so we'll see if we can get some money for those if I can. Where am I going? I think as we've all been forced to sit by ourselves for a year, I should have a better answer. But I think like it's the first time that I feel happy saying, like, I'm really open to, like, what comes my way.
Yeah.
And I feel really grateful that I am healthy and that I have this great career still and that I'm working again and that, I don't know, grateful that I still love what I do, too. Because I was like, if I sit in this house, which I've never spent a year at home before, am I going to not want to go back? Am I going to be like, eh? I don't know. Like,
I think, I talked to so many people that are kind of going through that. And the thought of like, when you like getting vaccinated, I was like, all right, I can, you know, like when I was fully vaccinated, I can get out and do things. And then there was a part of me, it's like, oh shit, I got to get out and do things.
I know.
Oh, do I want to?
I know. And I thought like the first thing I thought about being vaccinated was like, I can work. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's so telling. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I can party again. Or I can, like, the first thing was like, oh, I can go to work. And as my therapist says, like, it's just all gathering information. I didn't really mind being here with my husband and my dog. I didn't really mind, like, if I wanted to see some friends, like, testing and quarantining so I could see them. I'm like, these people are worth it. That is worth it. Working is worth it. But, like, going back to, like, going out and doing all the things. Now that people are getting vaccinated and you're getting hit with all these invitations all of a sudden, I'm like, whoa, I am not ready for that yet emotionally.
Yeah.
But I am ready to work. And I am hoping, when you ask, like, where am I going? Like, I'm reinvigorated with acting. I'm realizing how much I missed it and how much I love it and how much I love being on a set and how grateful I am that I can be on a set again.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, just being open to whatever's happening. That's a really solid plan.
And not trying to like, I don't know. I read like the inspirational shit that I read and it's like, you got to get it. You got to go after it. If you want it, you got to make it happen. And I am like, no, I was doing that for 20 years and it was awesome. And I made a lot of stuff happen, but like, I'm kind of ready to be like, okay, world, like, what do you got? I'd like to see what you have for me for a while.
Yeah.
And also kind of being open to that and not trying to like force things. Or I got like this really amazing offer to do this movie that was like a dream role and a dream movie with a dream cast. And because of scheduling, I couldn't work it out. Mm. And I had to be okay with that. And that was such a great, weirdly, like a great thing to happen, because I can't control everything. We can't control when a pandemic shuts our world down. Like, we can only control like how we deal with it. I'm like, still, I feel like not answering your question.
No, you are. You are. Absolutely. You absolutely are. Because that's, like I said, that's a plan.
Yeah.
Being open. That's the whole point of, you know, you mentioned it before. I think we started recording like Buddhist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's Buddhism. Stay open, be ready. Yeah. Don't
cling.
Don't force.
Don't cling to what you think something is. Like, we can't, it's the clinging that creates the suffering. And if you know, there's like this woman I was taking these classes with, there's like, you have your in breath and then you have your inhale and then your exhale. And like, what's great is trying to find that moment between the inhale and the exhale. And like, I think in my past, the inhale would be like, do you want to be in this movie? And I'd be like, yes, I want to work. Yes, I want to be in this movie. Like, I want to try to like live in that like moment between the inhale and the exhale. And like, okay, wait, what is the movie? Like, what is the job? What is the person? What is the event that I'm being asked to do? Do I really like that back to that like Midwestern, like, it's all going to end. It's all going to be over.
Yeah. Well, and also too, being home with someone you love and your dog, that's the main thing. That's all that the more you get, you know, the more the older you get, it's always the older you get.
Just being
that's
just me, honest.
That's the important thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I said something when Conan and I first started working together, and they did some sort of TV guide or something, and they talked to me about him. And I said, I worry about him being like too much in this world. I said, because the quote was something like, I don't think having met David Hasselhoff 18 times is going to keep the ghosts away when you're laying in a nursing home bed. And he said that a friend of his was like, holy shit. Like, wow.
That's so dark.
Yeah, wow. But I was like, well, I just mean it. I just plain old mean it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Yeah. Now, there's the what's it all mean? I mean, you kind of said people reach out to you for advice. And, I try to find different ways to ask it. You know, like, what's the moral of your story? You know?
Oh, I know. I'm trying to figure that out. I guess we all are, right?
Yeah.
But I think, like, I want really badly to find a way to make the most people happy and to, like, help make people like the happiest that they could possibly be, to like find peace and happiness. And and when I felt like being an actress was a really selfish choice for my life, and my mom, of course, thank God for Midwestern mothers, being like, no, you bring people joy, like they love to watch you and it makes them happy. And I'm like, oh, that's so lame. And I think, like, well, yeah, if I can do that, But yeah. Also, in what other ways can I make people happy? So next time I come on, maybe I'll have figured it out.
Right.
But I would like to volunteer somewhere awesome. I guess I would like to find ways that I can bring joy to people.
That's the golden rule, you know? I mean, that's like,
yeah.
In a way, that's a way to interpret it. It's like, yeah, you know, I had a great aunt who used to give us like always kind of like Bible themed gifts and stuff. And one time she gave me a set. It was like 50 pens that were printed with the phrase, "Jesus loves you and so do I, Aunt Viola." And the card that she included just said, "Others," with an exclamation point, "love, Auntie Vi," because we called her Auntie Vi.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, you know, I mean, you know, you can make that go, being others driven can also yeah. like put you into a mental institution.
Yeah. And but it's, a lot of people in Al-Anon because of it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. but the urge is the right urge. You know, the urge is, you know, if you do it right and if you make kindness your goal, and if you mm-hmm. making other people happy your goal, it probably will work out okay for you. You know, you got to take care of yourself along the way.
Yeah.
There's always balance in it. But,
yeah.
You know,
I think sometimes overlook how easy it is. Like, it's so easy to like let the car in front of you in.
Yeah.
Like, that's that's an easy thing to do.
It's like, a tiny example. That's
it's like, so small.
Yeah.
Or like, I love my husband. Like, I know something so small as like doing the dishes before he gets home from work. Like, I don't have to. He's not going to be mad at me if there's dishes. But I also know like he loves a clean kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
That's so easy.
Yeah.
It's like there's so those tiny little things we can do every day for the people we really love and for strangers. Like, it's not that difficult.
Yeah. A big one is always like, you don't have to say that. Like, that's, right. You know, there's lots of things that people say where you just feel like, you don't have to say that, you know.
I know. My mom.
It's all about learning, you know.
Yeah.
You were going to say your mom?
My mom does it. She says it all. And that's a real lesson for me.
Yes. That's what parents are for, to set negative examples. To teach you what you don't want to do. Well, Judy, it's really been a joy getting to catch up with you and to see your beautiful face.
I love seeing you.
I do too. Yeah. And so thank you for coming on and sharing with us. And there were things.
Oh, things, yes.
Archer. You're still on Archer, the runaway juggernaut, hilarious show,
God
Archer.
For Archer, yes.
And then you have an animated movie coming out June 30th.
Yeah, called America.
The Motion Picture.
Yep.
And what's that about? Just quickly.
It's about America. It's a comedy. It's dark. It's funny. It's naughty. It's not for children, I don't believe.
My favorite
thing. Yes. I mean, it's directed by one of our producers of Archer, so that should give you an inclination. Channing Tatum and Killer Mike, and we have a great cast, and it's really a dark look at the beginnings of our country.
Excellent. Well, Judy, let's see each other face to face one of these days.
Please.
Yes. We're vaccinated.
Woo!
Hooray. All right. And thank you all out there for tuning in again to the three questions. And we'll be back next week with three more.
I've got a big, big love for you.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It is produced by Lane Gerbig, engineered by Marina Pais, and talent produced by Galitza Hayek. The associate producer is Jen Samples, supervising producer Aaron Blayert, and executive producers Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile.
We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.